يدي هو افريكان سيبراد يجا من سمر سميت مي براد I think time is 14:30 and we had set ourselves to start at 14:30 so I will not be held responsible for those who are not here because at least we have agreed that 14:30 we can start. In our midst we have the office of the Auditor General. Coming to talk to us, Office of the Auditor General is a Chapter 9 institution. And I've said to them, we are prepared to respect them as a Chapter 9 institution because it's our work. It's us who have created them. So we must be seen working together with them. To the team from the Office of the Auditor General, you are welcomed. I am informed that you are going to be working closely with us. And in my previous capacity, you have always been looking for commitments. If we agree on something, you'll then say, can you commit yourself on your agreement? I thought I'm going to share that with my daughter. I think it's a very good approach. You say something, can you commit yourself in writing that you're going to do this? What you are saying. You are welcome. We look forward to working with you. This is a team of men and women that we are working with. In front of me here we have Honorable McDonald, all the way from Free State in Bloemfontein. So Bloemfontein is south, Yeah, south. And next to him there is Honorable Ramatoa. She likes raising issues of Limpopo because she's from that part of the world. She speaks fluent Venda. Especially when she sees somebody from Limpopo. And I can assure you, I've not seen, this one, you can speak with one of them. Then we have next to her, Honorable Dwalashe. Dwalashe. Yeah. We normally say CCC. Honorable CCC. And at the back here we have Honorable Manu, who stays in Joburg, but when things are nice, he tells us he comes from Eastern Cape. Now you must expect that when he's in Joburg, he says, no, I'm a resident here. and next to Honorable Manu is Honorable Yabo. He claims he's a fully fledged citizen of Gauteng. So I won't say much. Then next to him is Honorable Ketamaba from my original home province, KZN. No, when it is nice, I'm born and bred in the Eastern Free State, but originally from KZN. Then next to him we have the Honorable, who says if you forget his name, you must just say January, February, March, April, May, and stop there. Actually from Western Cape. Eh?
No,
where are you from? Eastern Cape. How about? Oh, I thought you are from this part of the world. Then next to him we have Honorable Hood Singer, who claims to be a Western Caper. And so I got it right. And next to him we have Honorable Mapena. He comes from the border of Gauteng and Mpumalanga. And he says that is Mpumalanga KwaNdebele when he's happy. And we have two members who are not with us here. Honorable Noli Chungu, who hails from Cape Town, and Honorable Anagumang, the one who sits next to you, Honorable Mapena.
Isaac Seitholo.
And then we have officials. We also have an advocate in our midst, so we'll from time to time consult. And we have a doctor. Am I correct? So don't think qualification-wise we are challenged. just to indicate. Advocate Nell at the back there. She is from Gauteng. She tells...
Potchefstroom originally.
Potchefstroom, Northwest. Hey, I'll know today. Then we have Dr. Ngezi. He ran away from Eastern Cape, now he's in KZN, so he does not want this Ngezi.
No.
Now I find many Ngezis in Eastern Cape. He says, no, I don't know these people. And then we have Honorable Mahlathi next to him. Yeah, I just know that she's married in Free State. Am I correct? Yeah, where are you from? KZN. Yeah, so it's KZN. And then next to me here, we have Miss Valerie Carrels, who also hails from Western Cape. Those are the nitty-gritties and politics of provinces. If you go to Eastern Cape, they'll say, hey, where are you from? Ebay. You know, or Ecala. Those are the politics of areas. Yeah. No, over to you, Office of the AG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. And good afternoon, Honorable Members. On our side as an audit office, it's really an honor to meet with the members. And we take the relationship with Parliament very, very seriously, because that's where our work get consumed a lot, and to ensure then that we work for the better South Africa for all of us. But before we can start with our session, I just want to take this opportunity to introduce ourselves. My name is Polani Sokombela. I'm the business executive from the Auditor General of South Africa. With me, next to me, I've got Mary Ann Whitford, who is the senior manager, also in the Auditor General of South Africa. Next to Mary Ann is Nicholas Mukwena, who is the senior manager responsible for technical support. So anything that is very difficult, Nicholas is the one then that normally deals with it. That's why he is here. Behind me, the lady that is behind me, her name is Makopoi Griffith, who is our parliamentary liaison manager. So she's the one that assists us. We are from Pretoria. Our head office is in Pretoria. So Makopoi, then she is permanently here in Cape Town to ensure then that she looks after us. Honourable members, I think on our side, it's important to state that I think the purpose of us, and we thank the opportunity to be given an opportunity to sit with you today, and also to share with you in terms of how we work as an audit office. We deemed that it's important that we should have this capacity building program today to ensure then that as the members of the portfolio committee, then you are able to effectively utilize our reports with an understanding when you're doing your oversight work as the members. And also, during the month of October, there will be the budget review and recommendation reports that you will be preparing. And also then, today's session also is to prepare you as the honorable members for that session, because we're going to be coming in October to share with you the outcomes, the audit outcomes of the transport portfolio, i.e. the department, as well as the entities then that are under the Department of Transport. We also want to expand also on the new powers of the Auditor General in terms of the Public Audit Act. There are certain amendments that were made in the Public Audit Act that became effective on the 1st of April 2019. And we just want to expand so that we can demystify some of the issues that are emanating from that law. Also, it is important to note that today's session, we are not going to be sharing the audit outcomes of the transport portfolio. We will do that session when we're doing the BRRRs in October. But as part of the slides, you will see there will be some examples in terms of audit outcomes, but they will not necessarily be speaking to the audit outcomes of the transport portfolio. As the Auditor General of South Africa, we like the chairperson has said, we're a Chapter 9 institution, but our mission is to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through auditing. And we believe that when we're doing that, then we're building public confidence in the country. Then we've got the Public Audit Act, also then that is expanding from Section 188 of the Constitution, which then is very specific then that the Auditor General of South Africa must prepare the audit report containing an opinion or a conclusion on the fair presentation of financial statements, on compliance with applicable legislation, reported performance against predetermined objectives. So that is our primary mandate as an audit office, that we are mandated then to audit and report on the government entities like that. But then Section 5 of the Public Audit Act also gave the Auditor General discretionary audits or discretionary powers then to audit, to do some sector audits, as well as to perform investigations and also some performance audit as well. Honourable members, I think we thought that it's important that also we clarify in terms of then the work that we do. And this slide that you see in front of you is just expanding on Section 20 in terms of what Section 20 of the Public Audit Act requires us to do. Because at times it gets confusing in terms of what is it that the Auditor General is supposed to be doing and what is it then that the Auditor General is not doing. I'm going to start with what we do. What we do is that we When we audit the financial statements of the government departments, the public entities that we audit, or municipalities, we provide assurance that the financial statements are free of material misstatements or are free of errors, meaning that what the entities are presenting to the public or to Parliament is accurate. We also report on the annual performance report or on the targets that the entities they set themselves, and that report then that is reporting there. We're reporting whether then that report is easy to read and also is reliable, meaning that the targets are smart or the key performance indicators are smart. And also we report on material non-compliance with law. And if we find out that the entities also, they didn't comply with law, we do report. And also through that process, we also identify in terms of what are the internal control weaknesses or deficiencies that needs to be addressed. And what I always call it is that our role is that then we sell messages to our clients, because it's very important then that we message it. But then what we don't do is to guarantee the completeness and accuracy of all the information at the entities. Because when we're testing then the accuracy of these financial statements or compliance at times, we select sample sizes because of the magnitude of the data then that is there. So we don't necessarily guarantee then the completeness of that. There's always that risk that things may not be accurate. We also do not provide assurance that service delivery has been achieved. But what we do on the service delivery side is that annual performance report that the entities or the government departments they produces, we audit whether what they said they've delivered the service delivery, whether it is true or not true. But we don't audit why didn't you do that or why didn't you do something else. We also do not provide assurance that all applicable laws and regulations have been complied with. What we normally do also is just select certain laws that we're going to focus on. To say we're going to focus on this law and that law, because there's a lot of laws that are there. Also, what we don't do is identification of fraud. But I just want to qualify this statement, because I think when you look at it coldly, it means that we just don't identify fraud. What we do is that when we audit, if there is a fraud that has been identified, we do follow it up. We do ensure then that it gets investigated. We do ensure then that we follow up to ensure then that there is consequence management, i.e. people at this disciplinary process that is done, where applicable, people are reported to the relevant authorities, among others. But that is not our primary purpose, because our mandate is very clear in the Public Audit Act in terms of what our mandate is. What I'll do now, honourable members, I'll hand over to Mary Ann. Mary Ann then is going to take us through then the other slides.
Afternoon, honourable members and chair. Thank you very much for this opportunity to be able to share our methodology and our processes with yourselves. In terms of the next slide, you'll see that we then start talking about the types of audits that we conduct. So we have the mandatory audits, which are in terms of the legislation, which then says that we will do on an annual basis. We will do the audit of the annual financial statements, the compliance with laws and regulations, as well as the audit of predetermined objectives. So these audits are the ones that culminate at the end. We get the information on the 31st of May from the departments and the entities. We audit it, and then by the 31st of July, that is what we then report on. What's also very important to take note of is we look at past years. So in the 2019 year that we're now looking at, you're looking at 18. 19 financial year. So it is a retrospective type of audit that we then look at. In terms of the financial statements, we look at it in terms of to see whether it's in terms of the frameworks that are set for financial statements. For compliance with laws and regulations, as Polani indicated, we don't look at all laws and regulations. The ones that we really look at in terms of is your PFMA, your treasury regulations, and your supply chain management, which are the ones that really lead to a lot of the findings that we have. Then the predetermined objectives, there we also, as Pilar indicated, we don't, we audit on a sample basis as well, but what we do there is we don't go and audit all the programs. We look at the ones that are the most material and the one that really drives the mandate of the department or the entity, and those are the ones that we would then be reporting on. The next type of audits that we have are discretionary audits, which are vis-a-vis investigations. We report on factual findings, allegations, and financial misconduct. So those are ones that the Auditor General would then decide on in terms of the discretionary. That's precisely what the word indicates. Then we have special audits, which are factual findings, and then we also have a section within the Auditor General that does performance audits. And a performance audit looks at your effectiveness, efficiency, and if it was economical. So in our audit that we do is the mandatory audits, which are the regulatory auditors, which are this team that are sitting here, we don't necessarily go along and look at it and evaluate the efficiency, effectiveness, and money side of it. But we do have the section that then does those types of audits within the Auditor General. If we look at the next slide, it's the types of audit opinions that you can get. And we have five specific ones that we look at. We have the clean audit. And in this instance, when we say it's a clean audit, it's very much a term that has been derived from within the Auditor General. So if you come from outside, it wouldn't necessarily be a word that would be known. But in terms of the clean audit, what it means is that when we've audited, we haven't found anything that needed to be reported in terms of the financial statements, in terms of the compliance with laws and regulations, or with the performance information. So basically, what the entity needed to report, they reported, and they reported correctly and accurately. Then you have an unqualified with findings. Here we say that they managed to get the financial statements were now correctly recorded, and it could have been as a result of findings that we might have raised, and that they then went back and corrected the financials, and then they have with findings. So the findings could be then related to the non-compliance or to the any other areas as well as internal control deficiencies that we then also highlight into the unqualified with findings. When we have a qualified audit, this basically talks to the financial statements. Over here we then say that we weren't able to determine whether the financial statements were correct in a specific area. For example, if a place has got problems with assets, and we go and do all of the work that we can do on assets and we still can't find out that the amount is correct, then we will say everything is okay except for assets. Then the adverse opinion is, this is where we've gone and we've identified there are lots of problems in a lot of areas. So it will be assets and it will be payables and it will be a lot of areas, and we just really don't know. We cannot determine from our side whether the financial statements are really a fair presentation. So then we'll say we find that they're not a fair. In a disclaimer, that is when we don't get the information. So if you don't give us information as the auditee, then we can't do anything at that point. So then we say, well, we can't give an opinion, and that's basically where your disclaimer comes into the process. So those are the five areas. As I say, they relate to your financial side. because currently where we are not yet expressing any audit opinion on the performance information in the audit report. That is in our management report at the moment. So you won't see that in the audit report as such. I hope that makes sense. Okay. This just gives you a bit more of a detail again, where it's now more in the verbal and the straight line process, where it says the your four types of opinions. The financial statements give a true reflection, which is your unqualified one, and it's in terms of your reporting framework. Your qualified one says there were departures, where there was something that you didn't quite get right, but it isn't material and pervasive. Pervasive meaning that it touches a lot of areas. When we get to the disclaimer here, you can say there was a limitation and it was pervasive and we couldn't get the information. And then the adverse is where we basically get into also disagreement with management and regarding the departures from the financial reporting. And they are pervasive. That's where we're saying that, again, you've got it across more than one line item in the financials. Then understanding the clean audit, and basically the idea behind when the Auditor General in the past actually brought through the concept of the clean audit, it was if we get certain things right, then this means that we should be actually doing service delivery, we should be getting things correct. So if you've got a good administration, then it means that your financial statements should be unqualified, which is a good thing, and you should then also be free from material misstatements. You should have no findings on compliance with laws and regulations, and there should be no material findings on performance reporting and predetermined objectives. So that's a good picture that everybody's striving for. And to be able to achieve, and that's what we're saying, if everybody could get there, that would be a wonderful picture for us. Now when we look at what it was in terms of the clean audit, and we look at this, I would say that, it's not a dump, but it's a 10-year cycle that we're looking at here, that Polani also indicated that it's here just basically, we're not going to drill down into the major details of it, but you can see where, if you look at it at a glance, you can see this is the national and provincial government over the 10-year cycle. You'll see not many people are getting the clean there. I know that we've also got at the bottom, right at the bottom, you've got your unqualified, your qualified with findings, all of those tabs, and then you get a different one that now says outstanding audits. Now that we haven't explained as yet in the process, but what an outstanding audit is pertaining at this period. So when this these slides were drawn up, it was this time last year, because we're going to be coming to you in October with this year's figures. So we don't have them yet to be able to give you that picture. But what these ones are, it's the outstanding audits means that these audits have not been finalized as yet, meaning that the audit report hasn't been signed off and we haven't necessarily completed all the audit work. And there could be various permutations as to why. It could be that there's been departure being given by the various ministers for this. So, and every year we have it. So you'll notice that if you look at it, it's normally only your last 2 years that you'd have it, because by this time when we come in October, 2017-18 should be looking, should not have a blue or very limited blue by then. Then we go and look at the local government. It's a very similar picture. You're getting the idea. So it's just to basically give you a snapshot of what the last 10 years looked like. Then if we get to the next slide, we've got it on the regular expenditure. And here you can see that if we look at the blue line, that's local government. And yeah, if we look at it, it's got the local government, and then we've got the national and provincial governments. So if we look at here, you'll see that national and provincial government for the 10 years had a lot of irregular expenditure, but we're not also focusing necessarily in this presentation on the amounts, but you could see that it basically peaked at 65.094 million at one point, and then dropped and then sort of started rising again. So these are the areas that, if we look at irregular expenditure, lots of people would want to know the proper definition of it. And in terms of irregular expenditure, this is when laws and regulations haven't necessarily been followed to the book. So, for example, in your supply chain management, you're supposed to go out, get your three quotes, or get as many quotes so that you can have the three and be able to then make the decision and get the best person in terms of your procurement policies, and you don't do that, it becomes irregular expenditure, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you didn't get the goods. So I think that that's also very important to note in irregular expenditure. When we look at fruitless and wasteful expenditure, you can see here the graph does quite funny things. And fruitless and wasteful is also where departments and entities spend money and they don't get the necessary reward or return on it. For example, as well, we've also got instances when you've got debts. There's a specific requirement that you need to pay your creditors within 30 days. Now you don't do that. You pay it in 120 days. You're getting interest that you're now needing to pay on top of that, and that becomes your fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So you as an individual, if you've got an Edgar's account or whatever, you're not going to want to pay interest on it. You're going to make sure that you pay it within the correct periods. So that is where your fruitless and wasteful side of it comes into it. Then when we look at the unauthorized expenditure, this is basically relates to expenditures that fall under departments where they have then not complied with the requirements of the vote. So they then exceeded the vote, or they didn't use the allocations as they should have used them. And that's when your unauthorized expenditure comes in. So you'll see that departments can have all three, and entities would normally have the irregular and the fruitless and wasteful. But it is possible to have none of them as well. If you're then in the clean picture, then you're actually having none of these expenditures. Then the next slide that we come and look at, yeah, my slides, I've got a problem with my computer. My boss needs to give me a new computer, because you'll see mine says values, and in your slides you'll actually have the actual value. It's a dull problem on my side. But only here...
We just approved your... Please get a computer.
Thank you.
That will be an unauthorized.
But then I don't have to come here and show these things without figures. So yes, in terms of when we're looking at this, basically we're saying that certain actions and consequences need to take place when there's unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful. And basically this picture was now depicting when we do an audit and then we come back the next year and we say, okay, has anything happened? And if you could see over here, the general trend is that if you look at the red little icon, it's saying not dealt with, then the other is written off, which they can do if it actually complies with the prescripts to be able to be written off. Then you get the condoned, and then you get the money recovered, and you'll see that those little green lines are quite small. So I think that basically when we're reporting, we come back and we say that there's been not much that has happened. that should happen, should be happening at the departments and at the entities. They're the ones that should be driving the consequences. And when we come back for the BRRR, you'll notice that this year we actually do look at consequence management. We've actually factored it in and said, is it taking place? Because later when I go and talk to the amendment to the Public Audit Act, that is something that is needed to be done by the entities and the departments. Then if we look at the root causes of the poor audit outcomes, we say, and I mean some of it looks quite blatant and to the point, we say there's slow or no response to our recommendations. So when we do our audit reports and our management reports, we give the finding, then we say this is what we perceive to have been the root cause, and then we give a recommendation and we say, you need to correct it by doing either X or Y, and then when we come back, then nothing's been done. And that's when we have the self-same response. So that's when we say, the first year we wouldn't say the slow or no response, the second year we'd say slow, the third year, like we go, okay, now you've got no response. And I think that in many of the entities that is a problem. So that's why we're saying it's a blatant disregard for controls and compliance with the legislation and the AG's recommendations, because we're recommending that they go along and improve compliance and their internal control systems to prevent, detect, and correct. Then there's also a lot of capacity gap that we also find. Then we're also finding that there were lots of vacancies and instabilities within the entities and the departments. Then we're also having unethical behavior in administration by political leaders as well. And then we're having inadequate consequence. And I think that this is really something that we've driving in the current year's audit, is to look at this and say that leadership is inactive, they're inconsistent with their actions, they don't take steps against the transgressors. And so what happens is the people that are doing the bad things out there, so there's no consequences at the end of the day. And that is one of the crucial things that is driving the increases in the irregular and fruitless and wasteful. If we look at the number of audits that we have as an Auditor General, the regularity audits, which are the ones that, as I said, that we do the normal run-of-the-mill ones, is we've got 952. Of these, then, we get one consolidated PSMA audit that then comes into a general report. So that is where all of the departments get summarized into this huge report, and the Auditor General then expresses a message. Then we also have one consolidated PSMA general report, where all the PSMA audits, then the Public Finance Management Act for the municipalities, then also gets collated and then given as a comprehensive report where he can then compare things. And it's those slides that you saw earlier with the bars, that is basically where that would have come from. What the Auditor General has also now implemented as well in trying to be more proactive in our approach, and we really started it in the last year as well, so maybe the impact would be coming through in the next round of audits, is we do a status of records review. So what we do is, prior to coming in with our audits, so while they're still in the financial year, we'll come in and we will look at certain aspects, the books. So if there've been problems with assets, for example, and there've been commitments made, we would then go along and evaluate those commitments, but by actually doing testing of those. Then we report that to the accounting officer at the department and the accounting authority at the entities, and then we expect some sort of action to take place so that by the time, because it's an early warning signal, you know, fix these, and then hopefully by the time the 31st of March arrives, you wouldn't have had a problem, because that's when the financial year then ends. So I think that that's really another way that we're trying to be proactive to be able to also assist in providing assurance. Then if we look at the oversight that we then give and the AG's contribution to it, we do a lot of interactions and stakeholder engagement where we engage with the executive authority. We try and do that as regularly as possible. We try and have executive authorities engagements at least 2 to 4 times a year. We also look at the annual performance plans that the departments have got there. We do a proactive looking at that. We share audit outcomes annually with all the relevant speakers, MECs, ministers, legislatures. We update on the progress of the current year's audit. We share audit risks and the status of records review after a 6-month period. We attend briefings with yourselves and any of the scopers and those things. We also, the AG himself then also does the roadshows after each cycle. So once his general report comes out, then he goes on his roadshows. And then we also share performance audit outcomes when it is due. So those are those discretionary ones. Those other ones that we can do with looking at the efficiency, effectiveness, and economic side of it, they then would also be, once those audits are finished, they would then be tabled. Then over here, later I'm going to be handing over to Nicholas to take us through a lot of this, but this is what the roles of the members of parliament are. And if you look at it, we put it in a circular form, and we're saying that this is, and how do we then come into this process with you? So we've put down the 5 areas. We say the committees gather information, and you examine reports, and you get briefings, and you hold hearings. And then the committee makes findings and you formulate recommendations and user reports for the department. And then we also share our insights on the root causes for the audit outcomes, which you can then use in these reports to actually enhance your oversight over the department and the entities. Then you, step 3 is the legislature adopts committee report schedules, debates and sends to the executive. And then the next one is the executive now is supposed to take accountability. So that's where the important thing is that they need to be accountable and they need to respond to yourself. And then the loop is closed by assuring that once that those responses come to you that you can then evaluate it again. And again, we then track the whole process to make sure that this is actually the closed loop that it is, to ensure that we then get the assurances so that you also then become part of the assurance drivers in the whole matrix that we've got. Then we come to the, I think, the interesting one, which is the Public Audit Act Amendment. This was really something that it was driven by the office. It was eventually signed into effect, and we are now currently in the process of implementing it. But if you look at the main definition, the main change in the Act is where we use a word called material irregularity. And then we've broken it down and we've got the definition, and we're saying, what is irregularity? So it means that there was a contravention, which is we broke a law, there was fraud, there was theft, there was, you didn't do what you were meant to be doing. And then the material is where we look at it, if there was money lost, there was misuse of resources, which is cars, vehicles, whatever, medical equipment, you know, all of those sort of things. And there was substantial harm caused to the public. So that means it could be death, or they didn't get a service, or those sort of things that would then be the problem. So it's something that went wrong, but it was really bad, is if we can categorize it like that. Then if we look at the concept of it, what normally happens, if I can go a step back, we have the CFMA and the Treasury regulations, for example, when we're looking at national. And those were very, very good pieces of legislation. They drove the whole process. And those are still very much applicable. So your accounting officers and your accounting authorities should be doing that. So now what happens is when we come in and we do our audit, we're not putting any more stringent rules or putting more rules in place for them. We say, you need to comply with what is already in place. But should we find that it's you're not doing it, then we do our steps. So basically we're saying that what happens is that should we identify a material irregularity, we then report it, first of all, to the accounting officer, the accounting authority, and they then need to put steps in place, they need to investigate it, they need to follow up and then do consequence management. If we find that this looks really bad, it looks like potential frauds, and it wouldn't be necessary, the best bodies would be the entities themselves to do it, then we can refer it to these public bodies for investigation. And those public bodies are your public protector, your special investigations, you know, all of those entities that we wouldn't be doing it ourselves. That's the one important thing, because we don't necessarily have those skills to be able to evaluate, you know, for example, has a roads construction proper? You know, we auditors, you know, so we don't have those skills, so we need to hand over to those entities to get the skills. So what we then say is, once this whole finding has been formulated, then we say to the entity that you now need to take remedial action. And we give them specified timelines in which to do the remedial action, and then should they not do it within that timeline and it isn't the correct remedial action, then we can issue a certificate of debt. And this certificate of debt is where we would then issue that to the accounting officer, which is the DG, or to the accounting authority, and they become individually liable for that amount. So it would be that they then, we're coming to them to say, you need to now, if it was a loss of money, then you need to give back that money. So I think that that is the area, but the money is not going to come to us. It's also going to be without us. All we do in the whole process is we do our audit process, we identify the material irregularity, and then we hand it back to the entity. They need to take the remedial action. If they don't, then they're going to get a certificate of debt. And when we look at the commencement of this act, it says to be proclaimed in our notes, but it isn't. It was actually brought into being with effect from 1 April 2019. When we look at that date, it's for any audit that would have been after that date. So for the current audits that we were doing now, it is actually in that period. So when we looked at the implementation of the act, we're then doing a phased-in approach, because obviously we need to make sure that we, when we're doing the implementation, that we actually get it right, and we then looked at certain criteria as to which auditees would be selected for it. So if you look at the bottom of the slide, you see the selection of the auditees. We looked at the latest audit outcomes, which weren't clean or they were qualified, and then we also looked at those ones that had high irregular expenditure over the last 3 years, And we looked also to make sure that when we did it, the entities that were chosen, we had a good spread with across all the spheres of government and the provinces. Then, if we go on to the next, the role of oversight. Over here, to use information in the audit report on material irregularities for accountability and oversight purposes. So basically what we're saying is, here for the oversight purposes, once of these matters are raised, then we would need to put in measures in place to have the entities be held accountable and to come back and report on it, and to have a timely in place action plan to address these issues. And you can use the reports on the progress with the material irregularities to oversee what is actually happening in the entities and the department. For example, it would need to go to debt recovery, which we noticed in those other ones is not really something that was happening. Okay. Then we're on to the combined assurance model, which will be Nicholas.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, honorable members. I think what I will close out the presentation with the what we call the assurance, the combined assurance model. As AJC, we have built in what we call the combined assurance model as part of our audit process. And we are of the view that if all these assurance providers, they do what is required of them, it will enhance the accountability and also the governance. And that will also assist the agencies and office to build public confidence. Then in the combined assurance model, you can see that the level of assurance we see is management. We call the first level of assurance. As the first level of assurance provider, we talk about the senior management, we talk about the accounting officers or board, or we talk about the executive authority. Because these role players are actually primarily responsible to take action, like to execute, for example, the financial management disciplines, the daily disciplines, and also even to make sure that they comply with the laws and regulations. Then you've got your accounting officers, the accounting authority or the board, who need to hold the officials accountable. Then we've got the executive authority who needs to also monitor the progress of implementing those adherence to the internal controls. Those are the first level of assurance providers. Then the second level of assurance providers, we talk about the audit committee, the internal audit. Together with the monetary institutions like national treasuries, where these institutions, this audit committee will, for example, make sure there are controls, they follow up on the internal controls implemented by management, by the first level of assurance. Then your institutions like the national treasury, they will also even monitor compliance with laws and regulations, and we're going to have also the internal audit function that will make sure they do the test those internal control, especially because they are fit for purpose. Then we have what we call the third level of assurance providers. There we talk about your oversight committees, just like the portfolio committee, the water public account committee, together with the national assembly. Yeah, we see on a quarterly basis, these oversight committees, they will call upon the institutions or the department to come and account, and that's part of the assurance that should have provided to these entities. You will see in the next slide where we talk about how we do the assessment of the portfolio committees. We as part of assessment we do assess all the role players here. Here are just the criteria that we use to evaluate to assess the portfolio committee members. I mean, to assess the portfolio committees. The criteria that we've done, like they are just limited to only those ones that lead to, for that are relevant to the work that we do. Not all the activities that are performed by the portfolio committees. The first one, then we talk about like, the invitation of the entities to come and present the annual government plans. Then we talk about like, the presentation of the portfolio, the budget by the department and the entities, and then the review of the quarterly performance reports. The what the department is doing, maybe to review the annual performance report or the quarterly reports in looking at the reasons provided by management. Then we in the next slide there you have like also highlight that we also highlight that maybe like the issues that we normally raise from our audit of performance information that they need to be taken into account when you review the performance report. As like I mean, what we'll do normally, we'll do what we call the interim review of the annual performance plans before they could be submitted to the Parliament. Then those insights that we get from there, they could be used by the portfolio committee when they are reviewing their performance plans. Then the holding of the public hearings, there we this is part of what PC the portfolio committee does. Then I think like those are all the criteria that we're actually using. But what we do as Honorable Chairperson has mentioned, that at the end what we normally do, we have the commitments. I think you will see when we do the BRRR, like that we will request some commitments from the members, and they will follow up on those commitments just to make sure that we are working towards improving the administration of the public interest and the departments. I think at high level, that's what we'll be doing with respect to the combined assurance model, and that's what we do as an institution.
Members, this is not a department. I'm not expecting a prepared way of dealing with them. we can't spend an hour dealing with them like we did. thank you to the office of the AG. This is capacity building. Straightforward, if there are any questions, keep them short and precise. I'm not going to take everybody. I'm not democratic this time around. So don't come back and say, can I speak? 1, 2, everybody wants to speak. Okay. Let me be democratic. Under normal circumstances, I take 3 hands, even when you have all raised your hands. But it's okay. Let's keep it short. Let me start here. We'll go through because this is our first engagement with the office.
Chairperson, thank you. Thank you to the Auditor General's office for their presentation. It was very informative. I do have a couple of questions. We've been told by the department that they work off a template that comes from the reporting template that you request. The template doesn't look much like a template to me. I just wanted to get some clarity on that. And then in the upper portfolio committee, we have 11 entities that all had unqualified with adverse findings for the last couple of years. Does that mean that at some stage there will be now a step further being taken against these entities, or don't Audit General audit the entities today, just the departments? That's my question. Thank you. Check.
Next. Short and precise. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not going to be long, Chairperson. I'm having two questions. The first one is that when they were presenting, they spoke of management report. What is that? Secondly, is that I just want to check with yourself, Ori. You know, sometimes the department can get unqualified report from the AG, but they in the community, there will be outcry of service delivery. These things doesn't tolerate. Why is it like that? Thanks.
That was good.
Thank you, Chair.
We're doing very fine. Let's test number three.
Thanks, Chair. I really want to appreciate the input from the AG's office. Very informative. Very clear. When are they starting to bind as per the new law? How far will they go, given the fact that sometimes this takes place between 18 and 16, between 2019 backwards to 2016, when are they going to start biting? Lastly, when are they going to start to take the communities on board? We're quite impressed, and the South Africans are beginning to understand what the AG's office is doing, especially when the AG himself presents that report. When are they going to make sure that the community standard understand from the beginning? Because they can now begin to understand that this municipality or this government is about to collapse whilst there are those interactions between them and the AG, far before the actual announcement that is usually done by AG.
The first question, I think they've answered already. This came into effect in April 2019. It is going to be phased in as we move forward. We're not going backward. Yeah, 2019, 2020, upward. Upward mobility, that's what the workers say. Right, with that, right, let me get to the most challenging side and see if we can win.
Chair, in terms of Rule 4B of the Portfolio Committee, you are intimidating us. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, colleagues. I think one thing that we are faced with here as politicians is that what the department is saying and what is on paper doesn't correlate with what is on the ground. Hence, we have service delivery issues, we have people who are not happy, and that is where we need to grapple with. So your presentation for me answers a lot of questions. However, how do we bridge that gap where really, where they say a road has been built, has it really been built or not? So for me, that is what it really boils down to. Now, my colleague has spoken about the pre-auditing. I think you said it's pre-auditing of APPs. Maybe you could explain what are you looking at there. I was just looking at whether the template is flowing or are they really measurable targets and so forth and so forth. Because let me talk for myself. At least I'm grappling with that. Looks like there's a disjuncture there. Lastly, Chair, we are doing very well. Asset verification, stroke asset registers, value for money. What is your role there, and what can we do to make sure that this is really achieved? Because the department can say we spend 100%, and they've ticked the box. The AG is happy with us. So we go to the ground, people are saying we need services. Thank you, Chair.
That is not bad.
For a start, we're doing well. Let's see going forward.
Honorable Chair, you are launching scathing attacks. Well, mine is going to be very, very brief. If it's a capacity building session, I would like to request that initialisms and abbreviations that are not explained be removed. The assumption should be that you are dealing with ABET people. That's the assumption. And so please assist us. If it's capacity building, don't make us feel inadequate by using initialisms and abbreviations that are unexplained. So there's AFS, there's BBRRR, and where I'm sitting, it's brr. it bears no meaning for me. So that's what I wanted to address very briefly.
Honorable Mundise.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Chair, just what I want to actually, you must appreciate the report, because it is an eye-opener. It helps us to understand. But what I want to find out, after they recommend, what other measures do they have to see that their recommendations are being implemented? Thank you, Chair.
You are doing very well. Honorable May, nothing. Thank you very much. Honorable Hansinger.
Thank you, Chair. I've got three questions. My first question is also around the pre-assessment before or as soon as KPIs and KPAs have been determined. I understand that there's a bit of a pre-assessment phase where it's passed with you, so that you have a look at it around measurability and so on and so forth. So my question related to that process of pre-determination of KPIs and KPAs is what criteria do you use to measure those, especially around the questions which some of my colleagues have touched on in relation to service delivery and impact, not so much outcome but impact. How much of the money really lands with our commuters and passengers. And since there's such a general reason for consequence management, why is it such a scarce item on KPIs and KPAs? We hardly see in any department, any entity, the presence of consequence management as a KPA. Given that you are the ones being confronted with that in terms of management flaws, because it's part of adhering to the principles around performance reporting. And then the other one related to that is around the more practical one of debt recovery. Would debt recovery be seen as a worthwhile KPA? And from our political side of this cooperation in terms of governance, would you encourage political leadership to include aspects of consequence management and more particularly debt recovery as part of future strategic plans? The other question that I have is a bit more of a practical one, and I would want to ask this under the heading of a peer financial academic, if you like, question. And it's around the Afro 4000 contract, where, to put it very academically, capital was spent, all the goods of the capital that was spent was not received or delivered. An auction has resulted from this contract in an effort to recover capital. And now my question is, would this then change the previous expenditure to a fruitless one, given the fact that you deal in transport with multi-year contracts and multi-year deliverables? If you could just give us your opinion on that. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Maltogoze Mapena.
Ngithokoze khulu sihlalo, ngilotshise institution ya Auditor General. Mine is just three quick ones. First and foremost is the phenomenon that exists within many local authorities. For instance, when they set their KPIs, like when they develop their own annual performance plans, they set KPIs that are so low that they can tick boxes that it's easy for them to achieve. And then the relationship between many of them, they've achieved their KPIs, the community is protesting, but then also in terms of the spending, they're not spending. And then also the, to what extent do we say a municipality is financially healthy? Like for instance, the revenue, the debt to revenue income ratio. We know that the municipality cannot borrow up to or over 40%, so their ceiling would be 40% of their revenue or of their income. But then you find that many municipalities are on the brink of that 40% or are actually at 40%. Would we then say that municipality is in a healthy financial position? Because you find that their debt commitments is so overly stretched that sometimes you may even think that they will not be able to meet their commitments come the period. Like for instance, they have a loan with DBSA that must be serviced over a period of 3 years, and then you know. So some of those things. I see the gentleman is nodding, so I guess he's got my question, Chair.
You have done very well, as Togo was on. That is it in a nutshell. We have not yet fully engaged on a question and answer session. We are still building some capacity. And those were clarification questions, and I can see other members have actually gone to the extent of indicating their frustrations on issues, but let's respond to them.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I think I'm going to start with Honorable McDonald. I think on the template that the department was talking about, maybe if we can get more information, we can be able then to talk to that. We there's a lot of documents that we work with them, but maybe if we can be directed towards which template, then we'll be able then to engage with it. But then on the in the transport portfolio, we audit all the department itself as well as all the public entities except one, which is the air traffic navigation services. That one we do not audit it. It's audited by the private audit firms. But all other public entities under the Department of Transport, we audit them. It's 14 of them. The traffic navigation is listed, Honorable Chair, as a Schedule 2 public entity in the PFMA. In the PFMA, yes. So the ones, I think Honorable McDonald, you're asking whether the ones with adverse findings, does it mean that there will be steps taken against these entities? I think I just want to reflect in terms of, because you'll see that in these capacity building slides, we're reflecting on the audit outcomes for the past 10 years. And also to reflect in terms of what has been our frustration as an audit office. Our frustration as an audit office has been that our mandate, as envisaged in Section 20 of the Public Audit Act, is that your mandate, you should audit, you should express an opinion on the financial statements, whether it's fair of, it's free of errors, and whether there is compliance with legislation, and whether then the report on performance information is reliable. And what we only do is just to give recommendations. But over the years, what we've been seeing is that we audit to give recommendations, there's nothing that is happening. And the law was not giving us any powers whatsoever in terms of what needs to be done. However, recently then, the 2018, fast forward 2018, then the Public Audit Act then was amended. That's when then the section then that has been amended, you'll hear Mary Ann when she was talking about the material irregularity process. That is then the part then in our law that is providing us then with powers, specifically the issue of consequence management. Because now the powers now that we have is to say if then entity A has incurred irregular expenditure and then there's been an investigation and then the investigation has found out that a certain official was involved in financial misconduct or fraud, we've got powers now to say, accounting officer, please take action against that person. Please ensure that person gets disciplined, or if the money has been stolen, please ensure then that this person is reported to the relevant authorities, i.e. Hawks, SAPS, among others. So those then become then the remedial actions that we give now in terms of the new powers. We give then those remedial actions. But if then the accounting officer does not implement these remedial actions, then we've got then the power now to say, okay, an official A, you have, we've got evidence that in your financial misconduct there was a financial loss of, let's say, 5 million. So if then the 5 million was a loss, we've got powers now to say, if you're an accounting officer and then you're not taking action against your staff, then we will then issue a certificate of debt to the accounting officer. Say, okay, you're not taking action, then we've got powers then to say, you pay them this 5 million yourself. That is in essence, then the new powers then that the Auditor General has, is to say, let's enforce consequence management. Because over the years we've been saying, please act, but we're at the mercy. We're at the mercy of the accounting officer. If the accounting officer feels like he or she wants to take action, we'll take action. If he or she feels like, no, we don't want to take action, we'll not take action. But in most instances, we found that there is no action. That's what then created then the culture of no consequence management. You find that you see that people are doing wrong things, but there's no consequence management. That is there. So that is basically then the key issue. But going forward now, with us then implementing these new powers, we are hoping then that we're going to be able then to see improvement in the public service. Honorable Ramato, I apologize for that. I think for you asked in terms of what the management report is, and we didn't explain it. The management report is a report that has got all the audit findings that we have for a specific entity or a department. But it's not a public report. It's for the consumption of management. It's an internal document. Because we've got a management report, then we've got an audit report. An audit report is the one then that becomes part of the annual report of the department or the entities. So the management report then is a confidential document then that management or the department or the entity will have at its disposal, and it goes into length in terms of what the findings are of the Auditor General. Excuse me. So that is That is then what you call the management report. I think if you request, honorable member, if you can, if you request it, you can be able to be furnished, to be furnished with it. Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. I think the issue of the concerns from the portfolio committee of the service delivery versus the audit process, I think we hear them. And for us it's very difficult because when you're looking at our mandate is that audit if financial management is done properly. That's our mandate, basically. In essence, our mandate is it go and check if Department A is accounting properly for the money. So you find that Department A is accounting properly for the, in terms of the money, but then you find that there is no service delivery on the ground. And you find that they are open and transparent that no, we didn't achieve, let's say we didn't achieve 50% of what we said that we were going to achieve. As far as people or citizens are concerned, that is a worry. But now, the challenge now is that us then as an audit office, then our mandate doesn't go to that extent now to say, why didn't you spend this money? Then that's when then the role then of other oversight structures then they come in, i.e. the minister, then minister needs to then as an oversight to look into this thing, then the portfolio committee then needs to ask why didn't you spend the money. So I think that is the catch 22, I'm going to use that language, I apologize for using that language, but that is then the catch 22 then that we are at. But then what do we also do? We do provide insights, for an example, where for an example, the targets of the department were not achieved. In our report, we will say, please refer to the annual report to the pages so and so where the department has not achieved its target. Then it's up then to the oversight structures then to go to those relevant pages of the annual report to look in terms of, and then ask the questions, why have you not achieved the targets? You know, so I think that is the challenge then that we have. And hence we say, as the Auditor General, we believe that clean audits serve as a foundation for service delivery. Because when there's governance, everything, there's governance, there's people, they adhere to processes, you know, there's the tone at the top is good, we believe that then service delivery will happen. But not in all instances, because other people, they just choose to say, okay, we just want to comply only. We're not going to worry about service delivery. But but what we believe in is that there should be service delivery, but also there should be a proper accounting of the money that has been utilized as well. So that is what we believe in. Honorable Dollar Chair said, when is AG will start to bite? Yeah. Yeah. We believe that the new amendments to the Public Audit Act will actually provide us with the new powers, you know, and we believe then that once then we have phased in now the new Public Audit Act, we've been phasing it in 16 audits in this cycle that we've just done, which is the 2018-19 audit cycle. In the transport portfolio, we've piloted it at PRASA. And when we come back for the BRRR in October, we're gonna be providing feedback in terms of what is it that we found. But I want also to be open to say and transparent in the sense that for us as an audit office, this is uncharted waters for us. It's something that we've never done before. Hence, we decided to be cautious in terms of how then we implement these new powers. The 16 audits that were selected, it was for us then to see how, practically now, how these new powers are going to be. And it's been a wonderful experience so far. And we are hoping then that we're going to roll it roll it to all other entities then going forward to ensure then that we implement the new powers. In terms of our stakeholder plans, because we've got stakeholder plans, I think Honorable Dolasho, you're asking about when are we going to start talking to communities. We've got our stakeholder plans in terms of, we categorize them, but if the, your civil society organizations, we do engage with them. Maybe we can do more, you know, in terms of what is it then that we can do more, but we do engage with, and especially when the Auditor General is releasing his general report, because we'll do interviews on in most of the radio stations, nationally as well as regionally, to ensure then that we reach out to communities. So we do try to ensure then that we engage as much as we can. But like I said, maybe we can do more as an audit office in terms of ensuring then that there is an outreach. At times, Honorable Manu, you talked about the department is saying, what is saying on paper does not correlate with what is on the ground. Yeah, at times we experience those instances. In terms of then, for me, as an audit office, we provide assurance in terms of what the department is saying that they have done. If the department has said that, okay, we've built 5 kilometers of the road, what we do, we go and audit whether they've actually built 5 kilometers of the road or not. If they didn't build 5 kilometers of the road, we're going to come back and say, no. It's actually 2 kilometers, it's not 5 kilometers. So we do look into that when we're auditing performance information. But I think one disclaimer that I want to say is that when we're auditing the annual performance report, we don't audit all of it on its entirety. We select certain objectives, you know, but those objectives that we select or those targets that we select, in most cases, those are the ones that are relevant to the mandate of that entity. So we select those ones and then we test them. I think on the asset verification, of value for money, that is our space. We look into that. If assets they exist, if the department is claiming that they've got assets, and you see in their balance sheet that they've got assets, we go and verify if those assets they do exist or not. If they don't exist, we come back and report that no, those assets they don't exist. So that is what we do. On the pre-auditing of the annual performance plans, we offer this service as a proactive audit process, because the portfolio committees, departments normally they come and table their annual performance plans in the portfolio committee. But what we do also for portfolio committee is to look at that annual performance plan first before the portfolio committee can interrogate it. But what we look into it is to ensure then that the key performance indicators as well as the targets, they are smart, meaning that they are specific, they are measurable, they are achievable, they are reliable, they are time-bound. So we do look into that, and also we also come to the portfolio committee to give feedback whether then that annual performance plan meets the national treasury requirements for preparation of action plans. So that is what we do, Honorable Manu, on the pre-auditing of ATP. We believe that is a value-adding initiative that we have. Honorable Liapo, we really apologize for the abbreviations. We agree. I think it's really an oversight on our side, and I can understand in terms of what that can do to you, especially if we call this a capacity building session. But you know, I think for me, even myself, when I looked at the slides, I saw it's one of those things that you like,
you know, but we really apologize for not explaining these abbreviations. I think Honourable Modisa, you did raise some questions after you recommend what are other measures to ensure that the recommendations are implemented. I think I've explained it in my opening remarks in terms of the frustrations that we have, and we're hoping then that once we start implementing our new amended legislation, we will be able then to enforce at least corrective action. On the Honourable Hansinger, on the consequence management, whether it should be included as part of the key performance indicators, I think the challenge that we have, we do follow up on consequence management, but the challenge that we have is that it's difficult for us to enforce entities and departments to include this as their KPIs. You know, because that choice rests with the entities whether they want to include it or not. But on our side, even if they didn't include it, we do follow up on it anyway. It's one of our focus areas to ensure then that if there is irregular expenditure or fruitless and wasteful expenditure is investigated and consequence management is implemented. If consequence management is not done, we report in our report. Even when we come here, we'll come here, we'll tell you that no, there was in entity A there was no consequence management. So we do report on the issue of consequence management. I think it depends in terms of how that consequence management. It can be in the form of a disciplinary process. It can be in form of a recovery of money, among others. But we do look into it. And, but you may encourage them as well when they come to appear, you know, to actually ensure them that culture of consequence management is entrenched. And also, it's included maybe in their key performance indicators. On the matter of the Afro 4000, I think contract. I'm assuming the honourable member was referring to PRASA. And I would request your permission, honourable chair, if we can perhaps talk about that when we come to table the audit outcomes of the transport portfolio. Then we'll explain that in detail in terms of how we've dealt with that particular transaction. But I would request your permission in terms of if you can deal with it like that. I think, Honourable Benner, on the entities they're setting their KPIs low. Yeah, I think that is a risk, you know, because people normally what they do is that, hey, we don't want to do a lot of work. We want to appear like we are good, you know, we're good people, so we're just going to set our targets lower. But the procedure that we do on our side is to ensure then that all the key performance indicators that are relevant to the mandate of that entity are included in their APP. If not, we report on it. So the indicators or key performance indicators for this entity are not complete. We do look into it. We do address it. Yes, the spending of these entities also is a concern on our side. But we also, like I said, we report that as part of the targets that are not achieved. On the municipalities, whether it's healthy or not, on our side we look at the balance sheet of the municipality. I think Honourable Mabena, you've explained it very well in terms of whether maybe what is the ceiling that is or the borrowing limit that is allowed for the municipalities to borrow, but we also look at the balance sheet, whether maybe how healthy is the balance sheet of this municipality? Does this municipality have more debt than assets? If the municipality has got more liabilities than it has assets, then
we classify that the municipality then has got financial problems. And also we look also at whether then the municipality has got enough money, will have enough money to pay its debts, at least in the next 12 months, will have, are they going to have the cash flow to pay, to honor their liabilities or not? You know, so we call that liquidity, whether are they liquid, do they have money or not? If they don't have, or maybe when looking at the future, at their projections, because nobody can predict the future, but when you look at their projections and find that maybe there are problems, then we highlight that to say this municipality or this entity has got a liquidity problem or a financial sustainability problem into it. My colleagues can add if there is any question I might have missed. Marianne, Nicholas, are there anything that I've missed? Thank you very much, Honorable.
Well, I think let's appreciate Mr. Sokombela. Sokombela. I can see you are in charge. So you audit all the institutions where government money is, whether it be judiciary system, whether it be other Chapter 9 institutions, everybody's. Are we going to see publicly how other institutions are faring? Because normally, as you have seen here, it's local and national and provincial government. We've never seen how courts and other Chapter 9 institutions are faring. And if they are audited, where is this information going? Because ours is all over the media. But we've never seen this other one. I'm just thinking at the top of my head as you are presenting here, if we are for public scrutiny, why not the rest? Don't reply, you'll reply when you come for the next meeting. Maybe let's also hope that we can deal properly with the confidence of the public at our level and also at your level. Any contract that is untoward, irrespective of who has won the tender, if it has to go for scrutiny, let's do so. It should not be certain contracts and other contracts who are like these other contracts you don't hear anybody talking about. That's what we experience nowadays. But nevertheless, I think you'll see the wisdom of me not allowing members to have efficient time, sufficient time. You'd still be responding to one person, I can assure you, if I had allowed them to really contribute as they normally do. We take this as a work in progress, members. But I also want to say to the Office of the Auditor General, we ourselves as the Portfolio Committee won't be crybabies. We will actually try and work with you to have a more biting stance. It means we know now if we are not listened to, we can come to you and say, no, we have a peg. Implement this thing. You said you'll implement. Go call the hawks. and assist you where we can assist you, where we have powers. And members, I'm sure I'm representing you when I say we are looking forward to working with the Office of the Auditor General. Because ours is to give the best service. We want you to write it as we approach year three. As we evaluate us, you must be able to say this is one of the most efficient portfolio committees we've ever worked with. And we'll also talk about you openly. If we think you are the most efficient team, we'll say so. If we think we need to beef up here and there, we'll say so. But thank you for your proactiveness in this regard. You can see members are asking a lot of questions. It means we normally take it for an example for granted that everybody knows about you. But from the questions that you are getting, it means from time to time we must try and allocate some time to explain those that we couldn't explain, and I think we'll kindly take that. Allow me then to, on behalf of all the members, thank you for today. We're looking forward in working with you. And as you are going out, food for thought, because you are seized with ensuring efficiency and efficacy, why would you allow Chapter 9 institutions like yourself, for an example, to be created by government? Why can't government do a simple thing of putting milestones and achieve them? Why would we need somebody to look after somebody and somebody to look after somebody and somebody to look after somebody before we can do the actual work? The department was telling us that they are looking at appointing private officials who will ensure that the traffic officers do not take cool drink money. Now I'm saying, why can't we just train these people and conscientize them to know their work? And if they're not doing their work, why should we continuously use this money that must be going for service delivery to hire people to look after other people and others to look? Is it a wise thing? And why are you not raising it if it's not a wise thing? I've been just thinking about it, and as a food for thought, as you are going out, I will remember it when we meet and say what is your view on it. But for now, thank you very much with your team. We will engage with you, leave your numbers here. We will ask you how are you doing in the deep winter of Cape Town as a Free Stater. Thank you. Thank you. Members, you are not yet off the hook. We still have to run a mile in less than 5 minutes. Then you'll get your medals for today. And you are all going to get gold medals. You have done very well. Yeah, you'll get gold medals. You are all winners today. You know that will be an audit query in front of the office of the AG. You're calling each other comrades.
You were not there. must be objective. You heard now from the agency, you must be objective. So you are the only objective one in this, you are not there.
You see now, nowadays, if you want to scare somebody, you must just say hoax. You know, in their presentation, they say, no, if you don't comply, they will report you. Members, I think we're left with an item dealing with the minutes of 25 July 2019, 13 hours. I've gone through the minutes myself and I've not seen anything untoward except to say that this committee is starting to be functional. In our minutes here we said today we'll be meeting the office of the Auditor General, and indeed we are here. We have met with them. It means we are reaching our targets, but let's check. Corrections, page 1. Any corrections? Page 2. Honorable Hansinger.
Just a correction of cosmetic value, Chair. Point number 3, second sentence, I suggest that the word made be removed.
The word made. Are you seeing the word made?
Point 3.
Point 3.
First paragraph, second sentence.
First paragraph, second sentence. And made suggestion. Oh,
yeah.
And suggested. Okay. Okay, page 3. Done. Can we adopt the minutes?
Okay.
Yes, sir.
I'll move to adopt with the one removal of one word.
Okay. The honorable member. McDonald moves, seconder, Honorable Ramatwa, right, any matter arising from the minutes, page 1, page 2, page 3, that is it, we're done with the minutes. And before I say that was the last item, let me appreciate and the manner in which you tackled and dealt with issues at the department level. I think when other committees struggle with people who must raise issues, members who must raise issues, I am struggling with time, because everybody wants to speak, which is a good headache. And when you listen to members, you can see that members are not just speaking from the rooftop of their headache. They have gone through what they wanted to say and they contribute positively. That is the headache I'll continue to manage, and at some point, because of time constraints, I may say 3 will speak. Don't think I'm out of order, because if you realize today we did not give ourselves time to listen to the new DG's perspective on how they are going to deal with issues going forward, because we are the ones that did the talking most of the time. So sometimes when I direct the meeting, I will deliberately want to hear the side of the department. How are they going to deal with these challenges that we throw at them? And trust my wisdom as a chair sometimes.
because it will come to that, but otherwise I'm looking forward to next week, where we are going to see these entities, and please don't disappoint. We will still deal with the issue of Thursday and see how best can we circumvent whatever we need to circumvent or adjust if we need to do so. You'll hear from us. But once again, welcome to this quarter. Let's do what we are supposed to do. With all the humility, of course, we do not want to come across as arrogant, but we want to come across as efficient. And sometimes, as we deal with these issues, I would love it if we prepare to the point of not asking questions only, but committing ourselves that we are going to give recommendations of what we want to see happening. Because at the end of the day, we must lead where others are failing to lead. With those words, to the officials working with us here, I think we're still on the line. Let's work together and see what we can do. We committed, and I can see your commitment. On behalf of everybody, to everybody, thank you. This meeting is adjourned. Okay. Honorable Ansinga, are you sorted for Thursday?
Yes, it sounds like it's sorted. I had a discussion with Honorable McDonald.
Was it in Afrikaans or English?
I can't recall what language.
Okay, so no, thanks.
But it sounds like it's sorted.
Oh, thanks. Thanks very much. Thanks. Thank you.